So we're going to go to our notes. We have four pages today. We're going to finish up page one a little bit about creation and some of the significance. And then we're going to do with design of man in page two and three. And then the composition of man, we're going to start that on page four. And we're going to get into some interesting stuff there. Now, somebody said last week was like drinking water from a fire hydrant. And that's the way it's supposed to be. So don't feel like one of the great things you have to learn in education is you don't have to get everything the first time. And you just got to keep getting volumes. OK, just keep getting volumes and volumes. And eventually some of it's kind of like sticks to you and gets in your brain. So read, 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 study, 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 take in, take in, take in, take in. And just keep going that way. And eventually you'd be surprised at what you do know. And that's the best way to study. So we're going to review a little bit here. Man is a created being. So we study the origin of man. And of course, let's fill in those blanks. 1B is natural evolution. Number 2 is theistic evolution, which is also called poetic creation. Poetic creation. Number 3 is progressive creation or the day-age theory. Number 4 is the ruin restoration theory, also called the gap theory. And then number 5 is the recent earth creation, sometimes called intelligent design, and sometimes called special creation. And you'll find different descriptions of those. And I'm sure you could divide it up in a lot of different ways, but that's the way I did, so that's what you got to remember for the quiz. All right. Let's say, what are some key biblical truths to help us sort through these 5? And I just put down 3 of many, many that we could deal with. As you go to chapter 1, 2, 3, etc. in the book of Genesis, you're going to have 2 words that are used quite often. In the beginning, God, what's the word?
Created.
Created, which is bara, the Hebrew word bara. So you have this Hebrew word bara. And then you also had the Hebrew word asah, which means to make or made. All right. So in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then you have the word made, and he made, and he made, and he made. All right. So, for example, in the ruin restoration, the gap theory view, the first verse that he created out of nothing, then there's a gap of time when that creation rebelled against God and ultimately God destroyed it. Now he's going to recreate it. So from that point on, he just makes. So we make things, but we saw him create things. All right. So God created in verse 1, but then he made from that point on. And the key there is there's a gap. Is that a good truth? Is that a good analysis? Genesis 1:22-21 says this. So God, what's the next word? Created great sea creatures. So he created great sea creatures. And we find that after verse 1 of chapter 1, he is still creating. All right. And there he created great sea creatures. And in verse 25 of chapter 1, and God, what's the word? Made. What did he make? He made the beasts of the field. All right. Beasts according to their kind. So God created sea creatures and he made beasts of the field. What does that tell you? These evolved. No. I mean, is that what it's trying to say? There's a difference in what he did with sea creatures. He created them. And then the beasts of the field, he just made them. In other words, they evolved or there's a gap or whatever. Just stick that in your mind. So he uses created sea creatures. He made beasts of the field. And created is used after Genesis 1, verse 1. All right, let's go to chapter 1 in verse 26 and 27. This is even more confusing if you're trying to distinguish between these two words. And it says in chapter 1, verse 26 and 27, then God said, let us make man, all right, in our own image, according to his likeness, our likeness, etc., etc. Verse 27, so God created man. So what did he do? Did he create man or did he make man? And the answer is both. All right. So how do you distinguish those two words? All right. He created man. He made man. All right. Let's go to chapter 5, verse 1. Now we're way after the fall and everything else. This is the book of the genealogy of Adam. In the day that God created man, he made he what him? I just said it.
Made.
He made him. In that day that God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. So here's the thing. You have the word created. You have the word made. Here are just 3. We could go to some other verses. We don't have time to do it. I've already proven it, I think. Is there a distinction between these two words? Or are they used interchangeably? Interchangeably, right? Now, there is a little bit of a distinction, too. I can create something out of nothing, and I can also say I made it. Would that not be true? If I all of a sudden created something here, you could also say I made it. So you can use both words for the same thing. The point is, I think if you accept bara and created and use it as it's used throughout Genesis 1 and 5, and Isaiah 43 says the same thing. He created man and he made man, etc., etc. You realize they're somewhat used interchangeably. And if that's true, it has thrown out this part of the gap theory. Their basis is that he created verse 1, but after that he made. That's not true. The Bible doesn't say that. It also throws out whatever other of the first 4 or 5 that you see at the top there of those theories of the origin of man. If God created, it throws out what?
Natural
evolution's out the door, all right? How about theistic evolution? Yeah, okay. How about progressive? Well, it doesn't really deal with that a lot. But he does say, and the gap theory's kind of out, 3 of the 5 are thrown out just if you accept bara and created as being 2 different words, but somewhat used interchangeably, and that in the end, God created everything. Heavens and earth, man, beast, everything. He created it all. You can't believe in natural evolution. You can't believe in the gap theory on that point alone. So that's one important biblical truth. Does that make sense? It's really quite simple. You don't have to be real smart to figure that one out. Number 2b. The meaning of the word yom or day, because one of the views that is very, very popular, science can be wrong, just can't be that wrong. So there has to be day ages, or the ages each had a 24-hour day that started it. And then so on day one, which is a 24-hour day, and then an age that follows it. And then day two isn't 24, you know, right after day one. It's after thousands and thousands of years. So let's look at the word yom, which means day. Is especially in chapter 1. Throughout chapter 1, where it goes, first day, second day, etc., 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 there is a, he defines it in, and at the end of each of them, he says, and the evening and the morning were the first day, the evening and the morning were the second day, the evening and the morning were the third day. He goes out of his way to do that. Why would he do that if it's a geologic age? Now, we're going to talk about a geologic age. I'm just going to call it a day. And at the end of my description, I'm going to say to you, now the evening and the morning were the first day. It doesn't seem like he would do that if it really was a geologic age. Maybe I could understand that one day was of the Lord's 1,000 years, and day doesn't always mean 24 hours. And, you know, if you wanted to really argue hard. But then if he says evening and morning, kind of locks it in for me. Makes it tough for me to understand other than a 24-hour day. Number 2, there are many arguments. I just listed 3. God rested on the 7th day. All right. And that's used as the basis of Exodus 20, verse 11. What's Exodus 20, verse 11? 6 days shalt thou labor and do all your work, but the 7th is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God, in it thou shalt not do any work. Da, 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 da. Why? For in 6 days the Lord God created heaven and earth, and the 7th day he rested. So if a day is a geologic age, it took him 6 geologic ages... to create the world. So he rested for a geologic age. And therefore, how long is your Sabbath? Enjoy, my friends. If you can just get through the first 6 geologic ages of your life, you can make it to the 7th. No, it just seems like they have answers for that. But it just seems like the natural reading of the text would say it was 6 days and the 7th he rested. And so 6 days you work and 7th, you know, does the word day in this part of the verse mean 24 hours, and then a little bit later in the same verse it means geologic age? Can you do that? Or would you just naturally assume that if you use the word day and it means 24 hours here, it would mean 24 hours here? So we are to rest on the seventh day. God rested on the 7th day. My day is 24 hours. His is a geologic age, and he uses the same word. It doesn't seem like it would be natural to understand it that way. The third argument, God divided the day from the night. Chapter 1, verse 14, 16, and 18. What does that tell you? Which part of the geologic age was light and which part of it was night, you know? It seems like he's saying there was a dark part and a light part. And no evolutionist or day age theorist believes that the geologic ages, each of those ages, had a long, long period of light and then a long, long period of, you know, 20,000 years of darkness and 20,000 years of light. All of them assume that the earth was rotating. It's 24 hours, 24 hours, 24 hours. So he divides the day from the night. just all of those. There are some other ones as well, but I won't go into them here. So exegesis would lead one to conclude the days are
24 hours.
Now, if a day-age person was here, or a gap theorist was here, I've just kind of made it real simple for you not to believe in them. They would have a better argument. I just want you to know that. They would come up here and you go, he's got a point. So just don't swallow it because I said it. Really study it. But in my opinion, as I understand the exegesis of it, you conclude a day is 24 hours. One of the ones that's not listed there, every place that the word day is used with a numerical adjective to begin at the beginning of it, for example, first day, fourth day, that's a numerical adjective that precedes the word day. Everywhere in the Hebrew language that you have a numerical adjective in front of the word day, it always refers to a 24-hour day. This would be the only place in all of Hebrew literature where that would not be true, if in this case, in Genesis 1, the first day means the first geologic age. So there's other supports like that. You'd have to do a lot of concordance drills to figure that one out, but people have done that. Okay? Number 2B. Number 3B, the meaning of tohu wabohu, which means unformed and unfilled. And Isaiah 34, verse 11, and Jeremiah 4, verse 23 use both words, tohu wabohu, and if you took the time to read them, they do not speak about creation. Remember, the argument is tohu wabohu means the judgment of God upon the earth. Remember Genesis 1, in the beginning God created, verse 2, and the earth was tohu wabohu, unformed and unfilled. The gap theorists say at that point it had faced God's judgment, because every place the word tohu wabohu is used, it means judgment of God and darkness is there and it means judgment. Well, here we have two places where tohu wabohu are used. It's not talking about creation, and it is not talking about judgment. And in other places, such as Job or Deuteronomy, tohu is used alone, not with tohu wabohu, but just tohu, unformed, and it's describing the desert or the empty places. Every time you go to the desert, does that mean this is a place of God's judgment? Look at this. No, it's just the desert. It's an empty place. And so tohu wabohu just means it wasn't formed and it wasn't filled. And so it took 6 days, or God used 6 days to do that. Why does it matter? Well, it eliminates naturalism, which is natural evolution or rationalism. God did create, and he did it through his Son. So I cannot just be a naturalist in life. I'm just a rationalist. I'm just a scientist. I don't get religion mixed up in my life, You can't be that anymore. If you believe in creation of man, you cannot be a pure naturalist anymore. A fatalist, which says life just happened and, the Islamic way of thinking, Allah wills, just boom, it just happens, I can't help it. No, it's all moving according to a plan. God created and did this, and he's working a plan, according to the counsel of his own will, Ephesians 1:11. He created, and it's all according to the counsel of his own will. There is a God, so we are not naturalists. He is in control, so we are not fatalists. We cannot be an atheist. It eliminates atheism. A fool has said in his heart, what has he said?
There is no God.
You got to be a fool to believe that. Next time somebody says that, just say, oh man, are you a fool? No. They probably won't like that, so don't try that one. And it also eliminates pantheism. Pan, all, theism, God. God is all is God, the New Age thinking. By the way, the New Age thinking really has infiltrated the church. It really has. And I just got a book. You take all the phrases that are used in—I hate to even mention it—but any very, 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 very popular book today. Many, many churches have gone to it. If you take the phrases that this pastor uses, and put them next to New Age, they are like bam, 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 right down the line. And he is a New Ager in the form of Christianity. And churches all over Waterloo and all over America are—we got to do our church this way. It is pantheistic. God is all is God. It's New Age is what it is. All right. So it eliminates all that. God is there. He did create. We are not fatalists. We're not atheists. We're not pantheists. We're not naturalists. What does it establish? Romans 1:20, for since the creation of the worlds, it has been evident that God exists, right? His Godhead and his eternal power. I mean, how can you look at the world and not say intelligent design or God? God does exist. It establishes dependence. In him all were created and all things are sustained. Colossians 1:16 and 17. So I am totally dependent upon him. And the day God steps out of the picture, I cease to exist. You know, I am not only created in that sense, but I am sustained because of him. Dependence. Romans 9:21. The potter can say to the clay, I'm going to do anything I want, right? And the clay can't look back and say, you can't make me that. You can't do that to me. You know, it says responsibility. He's the potter, I'm the clay. He's the creator, I'm the created. Boom. End of discussion. If he wants to make you tall or short or whatever he wants to do, he wants to make you the way he wants to make you, put you where he wants to put you, you just say, I'm just the clay. I am responsible to respond to him. Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory, which, what's the definition of glory? The wonder, the spectacle, the glory, the, you know, whatever. They declare the wonder of God. And the firmament shows his handy work, what he can do. And so those are very important. So it establishes worship. And finally, Genesis 3:20, Eve was the mother of all living. So one of the unique things about us as creationists is that we do believe that all of man, there's a unity of mankind. All right. We all come from the same genetic pool, all right, of two people. And then ultimately no one is buddies. You know, so there is a unity and many of the naturalists do not do that. What about the light years? All I can say is by faith we believe that God created the worlds. And so there's some stars out there 500,000 light years away. And we are seeing the light. How did that happen? He must have created it that way. All right. But by faith, I believe it. I don't have a real good explanation for everything that's thrown at us. What about the Grand Canyon and those kinds of things? Coal and stalactites, stalagmites and all those things that prove the earth has to be at least so many thousands and billions of years old. 2 Peter 3:6, the world that then existed. What's the next word? Starts with P.
Perished.
That world perished. It was destroyed by the cataclysmic event called the flood. And so we now live in the next world. There is the pre-flood world. There's the existing world. There's a world to come, etc., etc. So there are actually five worlds described in Scripture. This is the world that then was. So that explains the Grand Canyon. A lot of those things can be explained if you accept a Genesis flood. So somebody has a quote by Gish. I bet you Reuben does. Grab that microphone and read it, Reuben. When it comes, that ends this on the origin of man. We are created beings. We are responsible, dependent. We have to worship. We are united. There's no ethnic cleansing amongst us as Christians, is there? The world that does not believe that they have ethnic cleansing, we're going to go into a, you know, those are the tutus and we're the whatevers and we're going to kill them off. You cannot do that when you believe we are created by God. All right? Reuben, read Gish's famous little quote.
We do not know how God created, what process he used, for God used processes which are not operating anywhere in the natural universe. This is why we refer to divine creation as special creation. We cannot discover by scientific investigation anything about the creative process used by God.
That's a very important statement from Gish. Gish and Morris were with the Creation Research Institute and eventually became Answers in Genesis. That is a very important statement. We do not know how God created or what processes he used. And so sometimes we try to become so scientific in our explanations that we think we got it figured out. All right. You do not have it figured out how Grand Canyon formed. And neither do I. I can give you some options. All I know is it's there and God did it. And a flood may very well explain it, but it could have been God just dragged his fingernail through there. I don't know. He could have done anything he wanted. We really, at the end of the day, only know for sure what the Bible teaches us. And that's truth. And that's what I give to people. And that's what you give to people. So it was great to read Gish's. We cannot discover by scientific investigation anything about the creative processes of God. So man is a created being. And that seems very simple to us, because probably I assume many of you were born in Christian homes and were taught that from your birth. But if you are not, if you are trained in the other world, the rest of the world, it's a real shock to you when somebody says, I've had people say, you don't really believe in creation. One guy said, here, you're just too intelligent. I love that. You're too intelligent to believe in creation. And one guy said, you're just too rational. One of the professors at UNI said, you know, I really like you. You're just very rational and intelligent. You really couldn't believe in... He just couldn't get it. I said, no, I'm real dumb, you know. And I'm like the rest of the Christians. We have a low IQ, you know. All right. Any questions on the first part? Where did we come from? Origins, significance. What does that mean to you? Anything? All right, you're real dumb. Let's go on. There you go. We are, aren't we? By faith, I believe it. Yes. Pardon me? Oh, I'd have to get my notes here, but the created world. After that, there was a fall. You remember? So then 2 Peter 3:6 says the world that then was, which is the world between creation and the flood. So pre-fall, it must have been whatever. Between the fall and the flood, it must have been different. Then, according to 2 Peter 3:6, the world that then existed perished. So now we're in the present world. All right. The last two are the tough ones. All right. We're going to go into the millennial world, where the lamb will lie down with the lion. And it's just going to be different than my world. I know that. And then there's going to be the eternal existence. And maybe world is not the right word for that, but our final state, it will still be different than millennial kingdom. Okay? Great. So we're right in the middle. All right, let's go on. Not only is man a created being, the second thing we got to understand about man as we study the Bible is that he is a what? Or an image bearer. Or an image-bearing being. So this is the design, if that's the right word, of man. Let's go to Genesis 1, 26 and 27. Kind of going to have camp there for a little while, and hopefully we can get this down. Genesis 1, 26 and 27. God said, what did he say? Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. So the two words that are used here and throughout Scripture is this. When you think about us, I'm an image-bearing man. So it's image and likeness. So we have the image of God, the likeness of God. Have these been understood? What did that mean? First of all, you tell me without looking at all my notes. Your image and likeness of God, what does that mean? It means we're smart, right? Animals are dumb and we're smart. I'm just like God. I'm as smart as God. What does it mean? You know, it's a really tough question to answer. And you study this subject in commentaries in Genesis 1, you recognize we have really struggled to really nail that one down. And I know I do. It's like, I think I got it, and then I don't. So some have said, that means we talk. And animals can't talk. All right, image and likeness means I talk. Means I can paint pictures. I'm artistic. Is that what it means? What does it mean? All right. Here are some that have been given by the early church fathers, and they made a distinction between image and likeness. Image was the rational part of man retained after the fall. And I'm making this real simplistic. If you read 100 guys, you'd probably come up with 100 things. All right. But just in broad general strokes. So image means the rational part of man, which was retained after the fall. Likeness was the moral part of man, and that was lost at the fall. So we were created with the image and likeness. Then the fall happened. We kept image. We lost likeness. We're going to have to read some verses and see if that's true or not. But anyway, rational and moral. So we have a rational part of us. We have a moral part of us. Dogs and cats don't. All right. That makes sense in one sense, but is it true? Many understand that they're not distinct. They are synonyms. There is no discernible distinction. Hebrew parallelism would be going into effect here, just as in all languages. Sometimes you say something, you say it again, or you use a different word. And Martin Luther was the one who said image, which is likeness. Should be likeness there. And so one side says they are so distinct, one was lost and one is kept at the fall. The other said they are just interchangeable, it doesn't really matter. Image is likeness, likeness is image, and there's no distinction. Is that right? Sounds logical. Let's ask this question. What does it not mean? All right, here are some options. It means that I look like God. You know how tall God is? 6'1". Right? And if you could see God, he'd look just about like you and me. His body just like mine. Maybe it's a little higher, a little shorter, whatever. But, you know, my body is like his body. You think that's true? Why not, Ken? He is spirit. John 4:24, God is spirit. He doesn't have a body, my friend. So it does not mean that our bodies are patterned after God's body. All right. Some people have tried to make it. I think that's a slam dunk. That's why Christ in Philippians chapter 2 had to take on the form of a man, didn't he? And it was found in fashion as a man, form and fashion. He didn't have a body. He was spirit, and then he did. So Jesus Christ now, he took on the form of man, and for all of eternity he will have a body. But God is spirit. So it does not mean that our bodies look like God's bodies. Our bodies are patterned after his. And that's why monkeys look like they do and elephants look like they do. But us people, we have two eyes right here. We have a nose. We have a mouth. Because God has two eyes, a nose, a mouth, and ears, and he's got hands and feet. Some of them prove it by some of the Old Testament passages in the Psalms. The ears of the Lord, the eyes of the Lord are always upon you and whatever. So therefore, he must have eyes and ears and his feet and his hands and whatever. Well, you and I know that's not what the Psalms are talking about. He is spirit. So it doesn't mean our bodies are patterned after God's. Interesting. Ecclesiastes 7:29 says man was made up.
Upright.
We're the only animal that walks like this. So it means we're image and likeness of God means that we're upright beings. We don't run on all fours. Is that true? That's what it means when it says your image and likeness means you walk on 2 feet. What do you call that? A peta? Something? No, a two-footed thing?
Biped.
What is it?
Biped.
Thank you. I had ped without the bi. Thank you. All right. Is that what it means? This means yes, this means no? How many think it means we're image and likeness means we all walk on 2 feet? Because God walks on 2 feet. No. The word upright in Ecclesiastes, by the way, doesn't mean we were made upright. In other words, we were made to walk on 2 feet. It means we were made, we could translate it, to be righteous. It has nothing to do with standing on 2 feet. It means everything about being upright, about being righteous. We're a moral creature. We know good and evil. I mean, we're supposed to be upright people. Number three, it does not mean we were, are, or ever will be equal with God. Psalm 50, your thoughts are not. You thought that I was altogether like you. All right, Psalm 50, if you read it, he says, you thought that I was altogether like you, God is speaking. I am not like you. You're not equal with me. You never were, never will be. Isaiah 55, my thoughts are not your thoughts. My ways are not your ways. I mean, how many times does God have to say in the scriptures, you guys aren't as smart as me. You're not as good as me. You're not as perfect as me. You guys are not like me. All right. Jeremiah 10, 6 and 7. Inasmuch as there is none like you. God is there's no one like God. All right. So it doesn't mean we were like God and then we fell. Adam and Eve, really, they were just like God. It doesn't mean that we have all of that stuff. So what does it mean? The word image means to carve. Right? So I can carve an image. To have a shape or to shape. To outline or silhouette. So it means something about, I'm going to, Susan shares, if she was here, have you ever been to her house? She carves. And what's so interesting, she's carved little birds, like she has one, I think it was a cardinal. It's beautiful. The wings are real thin wood. It's just incredible what she has done. She's won at the state fair and whatever. Here's Joey running around with his carving that he's thrown through the air with this, you know, marvelously done. It looks just like a cardinal. It's just phenomenal. Is it a cardinal? No. It's just a bunch of wood. And she happens to have the skills to carve it and makes it look like a cardinal. And so when you look at it, you say, what a wonderful cardinal. And you're not lying, right? I mean, in one sense, you didn't lie when you said, oh, because you know it isn't a cardinal. It's a piece of wood that looks like a cardinal. It represents a cardinal. When I look at it, I think cardinal, right? And if you did an eagle, I'd look at it and say, eagle. Or if I did whatever. And so we are image of God. We represent God. When you look at us, when people look at you and people look at me as I walk through my world, some way I'm like a carving of God. Not a very good one, but still I'm His carving. And people recognize or should recognize something about God in me. And that's the way we were initially designed and to some extent still are. I represent God. Every day I walk through God in my world, I represent God. I represent God. I represent God. I represent God. That word, by the way, is used in Genesis 9, 6 and 1 Corinthians 11, 7. We're going to go to them later. We are still image. In some ways, that is still true. You still represent God. Some days you don't look very good. Some day your carving is not real hot. And other days you just spit an image. Man, looks really good. You did them well. The second word, likeness, I think, remember earlier, how do they understood? The early church fathers said they're this far apart. Luther said they're exactly synonymous. I think they're somewhat distinct, although very close. Likeness means to be similar. So if I take a carving, I could carve a cardinal and Sue could carve a cardinal. Hers, you would look at and say cardinal, and mine, you'd look at and say wow. You probably wouldn't even say bird. Wood. What was that? Did you get that caught in your router or what? You know, what happened there? So image, we represent God. Likeness, how similar are we? You know, how close is it? So we are likeness. It means to be similar or comparable. And that word is used in Genesis 5:1 and James 3:9. For example, that word is also used in Ezekiel 1 verse 5. Indicates that idols had likeness to the gods. That word is used there. That they represented. So if you're going to represent the sun by a carving, how would you do that? Would you carve a dog? No. You wouldn't carve a dog, you'd carve a sun, right? If you wanted to have a carving that represented, a falcon or an eagle, you wouldn't do a pig. You know, you do something that looks like it. It's similar to, all right? And that's what Ezekiel says, that the gods, and you read, you study the gods of the other worlds in history. If they thought the god was the sun, they would have a carving or a picture of the sun. If they thought that God was a bull, it would be a carving of a bull. It was a likeness, all right? Similar, comparable. So we are to resemble God. We're not only to represent Him, we're to resemble Him. And now we're getting on shaky ground. How can I represent Him and how can I resemble Him? Because He's infinite and I'm finite and He's perfect and I'm imperfect and all that kind of stuff. But just think of it in a broad stroke. As I walk through my world, as Adam and Eve were created, they were supposed to represent God and resemble God. And that's still what's supposed to be true of me. I represent God every day of my life, and I'm supposed to look a little bit like Him. Does God lie? Does He steal? Does He this? Does He that? And what the things that He does, that's what I'm supposed to do. And things that He doesn't does, that's what I'm not supposed to do, right? I'm supposed to resemble Him. So people can look on, the world can look on and say, you know, I understand your God. He's honest. He's loving, He's compassionate, He's, you know, the list goes on. We were created as an image bearer of God. We therefore reveal the qualities of God. Therefore, we are not like other created life forms. By the way, there's a book out. This is the God that the day has made. All right. All of the religions make their gods. This is the God that the day has made. But that is not what the scripture says. This is the day that the Lord has made. All right. He is who He is. We're supposed to rise to His representation and resemblance. By the way, that's why in the Ten Commandments, God says again and again, I don't want any graven images. I don't want you guys to try to carve something that looks like me. Why not? He's already got something that's supposed to look like him. He's got a much better plan than some little thing that sits on a shelf somewhere and says, there's my God. Our God's a bull. You know what he says? He's got I have a living image. It's you. And I don't need any inferior images. I just want you to be my image. I want you to be my likeness. And so it was very strongly stated, no graven images. I don't want any of this stuff made of wood and silver and stuff. I got you. Okay? So that's very, very important. And in the Romans, of course, the problem was they changed the glory of the incorruptible God into the image, like as that created by man. And it's just degrading to God to have that. So, what are some ways that man represents and resembles God? You walk through your world, people look at you, in what way do you represent and resemble God? Well, let me just take a second here, and you can't see this, but if you could see it, it talks about the attributes of God, and this is a partial listing. Typically, the attributes of God, what we think of as his attributes or characteristics, are divided in a lot of different ways, and every commentary has it different. But typically, you ultimately come up with those which are incommunicable and those which are communicable. All right? Incommunicable means they can't be communicated or passed on to you and me. For example, God is everywhere present. Guess what? You're never going to be that. He's all-knowing. Guess what? You're never going to be that. He's all-powerful. You're never going to be that. He is absolutely sovereign. Guess what? You're never going to be that. So there are certain qualities or attributes that are not communicable to us. They're incommunicable. And then there are other attributes which are communicable, such as righteousness, goodness, love, patience, mercy, grace, etc., etc. There are not everybody sees those as true, because probably we never can be as righteous as God is righteous, or as whatever as God is. And so, but in a small way, we can be like him. But let's just think about what are some ways man represents or resembles God. These are just some that are often listed. I think it is not exhaustive. We just struggle with this. And I'm not sure you can come up with a perfect list. I don't think I can. But here are some very common ones. First of all, we resemble God or represent God because we are personal. We have emotion, will, and intellect. We are people. All right? And I know your dog, you think, has an emotion and a will. I know he has that. And intellect, I'm not so sure about that. But anyway, the truth is, every one of these, as you look at the other creation, you can say, well, maybe in a little way they have intellect and will, whatever. But we are personal. We have feelings. We have actions. We have thinking. Somehow we are like God and represent God in that way. The next one is we are eternal. Or immortal. Of course, God was eternal from eternity past to eternity future. We had a beginning point, all right? But from that point on, we're gonna exist for all of eternity. Dogs die, end of discussion, they're not going to be in heaven, all right? I know that bothers you, some of you, but your dog's not going to be in heaven. Of course, some people believe they are. Anyway, we are immortal beings. 1 Corinthians 15:44, about the resurrected body, sown mortal, raised immortal, etc., etc. We are spiritual beings. In other words, we have the ability to walk and talk with God. And so did Adam and Eve in the beginning, and we still can. And dogs and cats and skunks and fishes don't walk and talk with God. So we're spiritual. We're moral beings. We know good and evil. Does a dog know good and evil? No, he just knows if I do that, my master's going to hit me, and therefore I don't think he wants me to do it. I don't like what happens when I do it, so I'm not going to do it. And I'm not sure he is able to morally comprehend, oh, that was wrong. I hurt somebody. You know, they just do what's natural. My dog used to chase garbage trucks. You know, he didn't know that was wrong until he got run over by it. But anyway, there are verbal. We are verbal. He really didn't get run over by that. He got run over by the trailer behind it. The amazing thing, he survived. That was a tragedy of the day. My dog got run over by a garbage truck trailer and he lived. What do you do with him then? Anyway, we are moral beings. We are verbal beings. We have the ability to speak. We are able to communicate with others and with God. We have the capacity for that. We are creative beings. We're artistic. We can create music and art and, you know, whatever. We build buildings and we have some flair to them and whatever. So those are some of them. And as you go that, you really, really struggle with, is that inclusive? Is that really true? Are we the only people that have emotions? Don't dogs have emotions? So you, to me, you still really, really struggle with that. And you still, you try to figure out what it is that we are unique about. I think right here. No, we're going to go with that later on. So I think we could expand on it. I think, David, you have something that John Wickham wrote, Dr. John Wickham wrote about man is the crown of creation. Just read it for us.
The physical difference between man and apes are enormous, as careful observation clearly shows. But if physical differences are great, the mental, cultural, spiritual differences are little short of infinite. Of all living beings on this planet, only man is self-conscious as a person, is sufficiently free from the bondage of instinct to exercise real choices and to have significant purposes and goals in life, has complex emotions including sadness and joy, appreciates art and music creatively, can make real tools, can be truly educated rather than merely trained, can use oral and written symbols to communicate abstract concepts to other persons and thus enjoy true fellowship, can accumulate knowledge and attain wisdom beyond previous generations and thus make genuine history, can discern moral right and wrong and suffer agonies of conscience, can recognize the existence and rightful demands of his Creator through worship, sacrifice, and religious service. Only man will exist forever as a personal being either in heaven or hell.
Okay, very good. We all struggle with what is the, in what way do we represent and resemble, and we try to do all that. In contrast to that statement, you have the work on, entitled The Naked Ape, and this man who wrote about it, Desmond Morris. Just to remind you and me, at the end of the day, no matter how smart you think you are, no matter how intelligent and artistic and whatever, you're just a naked ape. And as Francis Clark said, you know what man is? He's junk. That's all man is. And therefore, you can treat man like junk. Wouldn't you like that philosophy of life? Man is basically a naked ape and he's junk. So treat him that way. He's really not much better. The Bible says that we are an image bearer of God. We are not junk. We are not a naked ape. We are not something you can treat like junk. It is not that we are just nothing. We are the crown of creation. We are special. There's something unique about us. There's something spectacular about us. Psalm 8, remember, he said, what is man that you are mindful of him? The son of man that you visit him. You've made him a little lower than the angels. You've crowned him with glory and honor. I mean, we're something here, guys. And if you don't believe that and you accept evolution, you naturally come up with, you're just junk. You're just a bunch of chemicals. And some people think you're good-looking chemicals and some people don't, but you're just a bunch of chemicals, and if I want to shoot you, I can just shoot you. Because what does it matter if I destroy some chemicals? And God says, no, 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 no. You are the crown of creation. Our time is up, so we're going to have to stop there. Let's just take a moment to think about that. What impact does that have for your week this week, knowing that you're not junk? You're the crown of creation. Your image and likeness of God. Have any impact on you? What if you're a secular evolutionist and you believe you're just junk? How will we walk through our world differently this week?
Junk?
Pardon me?
If we were junk?
Yeah.
We'd have little regard for ourselves or others.
We'd have no regard or little regard for ourselves or others. Why treat it with respect? Why worry about it? Why? Who cares if 30,000 Iraqis died? Good. I don't like them anyway. You know. I don't care. Do you care? They're just Iraqis. They're just junk. Just chemicals. Let them die. Didn't you know there was an earthquake and a whole bunch of people died? Who cares? Who gives a rip? We need less people on this earth anyway. Let's just get rid of them, right? They're just junk. That's one radical difference, right? What else? May I just leave this with you? You are supposed to represent God this week. People don't see God. He has said that again and again in scriptures. No man can see me. So people, you know, they walk through the world and they can see what he made, but they can't see God. And so he says, I want you guys to represent me. We're not going to have little things on shelves, Buddhas with big belly and, you know, in corners of buildings. We're going to just have you walking around. You represent me. Make sure you look like me. You're not just image, you're likeness. I want you to be like me. I want you to be holy. I want you to be righteous. I want you to be loving. I want you to be compassionate. I want you to be merciful. I want you to be honest. I want you to be, that's who I am. Make sure you look like me. She walks through the world. And that suddenly makes life real somber to me. Doesn't it? How did I treat people? What did I say about people? What did I do? Did I look pretty good like God? Or not? Your image and likeness. Make sure you act like it this week.